awake. We just read one here together in Mark chapter 13. It is impressive in the New Testament. As you read through the Gospels and then you look at the book of history and the book of Acts, you go to the epistles, you turn to the book of prophecy, the apocryphal book of Revelation. At the end of the New Testament, in every part of the New Testament, there are warnings like the one that we read here in our text in Mark chapter 13. The English Standard Version says, be on guard, keep awake, stay awake. That's an appropriate warning at the beginning of a sermon on Sunday morning, right? Stay awake. Be awake. I don't think that's exactly what Jesus had in mind, but I'm going to appropriate it just briefly for a moment. Depending on the translation you're using, it will read a little differently. The King James and the New King James add something. The King James and the New King James say, take heed. This is the New King James translation, I think, on the screen. Watch and pray. Take heed, watch and pray. The word pray is not in the majority of the older Greek manuscripts, but it's certainly understandable that in light of the message that Jesus is delivering, to be on guard and to keep awake, prayer would be an important part of that. The New American Standard says, take heed, keep on the alert. The New Revised Standard Version, beware and keep alert. I really like the way the Amplified Version renders this. Be on guard and stay constantly alert. Be on guard and stay constantly alert. That's the idea that Jesus is presenting here in our text. And that's what we want to think about for a few minutes in the lesson this morning. Be on guard, constantly aware, keeping watch. Warnings about watchfulness in the New Testament, again, are common in every part of the New Testament. Jesus himself, in Luke chapter 12, verse 35, beginning, I'm going to read all of this in Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 35. Very similar to the reading that we just did in our text in Mark chapter 13. But in Luke chapter 12, Jesus says, stay dressed for action. And keep your lamps burning and be like men who are waiting for their masters to come home from the wedding feast so that they may open the door to him at once when he comes back and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will dress himself for service and have them recline at table and he will come and serve them. If he comes in the second watch or in the third and finds them awake, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. That kind of language is not uncommon coming from the lips of Jesus. He issues warnings like this over and over and over again in his teaching. And his apostles and the inspired prophets do exactly the same thing. Paul, for example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. And in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 6, so then let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. Again, sleep here, he's not talking about literal physical sleep. He's talking about not paying attention, not watching, not being careful about our spiritual condition. You have Peter in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, passage that all of us are familiar with. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Why? Because your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Warnings about watchfulness, again, abound in the New Testament. And I want to do a couple of things this morning. First of all, I want to ask the question, why is this important? Why should we be watching? Why should we be on the alert? And then I want to spend a few minutes thinking about some things for which we should be watching, some things we should be observing. But why should we be watching? And I want you to notice that all of these involve Satan. All of these involve Satan. Satan's power. I'm not going to read Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 through 11. We're familiar with that story, the story of Jesus being tempted by Satan. He'd been in the wilderness. He'd been fasting for 40 days. He comes out of the wilderness and he meets Satan and he is tempted three specific times. And remember that every time in response to the temptations, Jesus said, "It is written," or something similar to that. "It is written." He makes an appeal to scriptures. He was aware. He was ready for Satan's temptation. The idea again being here, and in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 5 in particular, Paul says, "For this reason, when I could bear it no longer, I sent to learn about your faith, for fear that somehow the tempter had tempted you, and our labor would be in vain." Satan is powerful. We already noticed 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, walking about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Why should we be watching? Because not only is Satan powerful, he is active. He is busy. Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 26, he's praying that they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil. He says, after being captured by him to do his will, Satan has a snare. He's capturing people to do his will. Satan is active. Satan is busy. Satan is powerful. And Satan is clever. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Satan is clever at deception. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 13, the apostle Paul says, "For such men are false prophets, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light." Satan wouldn't be as successful doing what he was doing, even if he was powerful. And even if he was active, Satan would not be nearly as successful doing what he was doing were he not so clever at deception. What makes Satan so effective is that he can deceive people, he can trick people, he can trap people, he can ensnare people to do what he wants them to do without making it obvious that he is responsible for it. In several of the texts we've read, we need to be watching because we don't know when Christ is coming back. In Matthew chapter 24, Jesus said in verse 36, "But concerning that day and hour, no one knows." He's talking about the time when Jesus would come back and bring the world to an end. "Concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only." In Revelation chapter 16 and verse 15, Jesus said, "Behold, I am coming like a thief." And what he means by that is he is coming unannounced. He is coming unexpectedly. Why do we need to be on the alert? Why do we need to be constantly watching? Because we don't know when Christ will return. And practically speaking, the return of Christ, all of us may not be alive when Christ comes back. None of us may be alive when Christ comes back. Practically speaking, at the moment of our death, the last opportunity to do something to make us prepared for the second coming of Christ, we don't know when that's going to happen. Most people, the vast majority of people, have very little warning about when they're going to die. Why should we watch? Luke chapter 21 and verse 36, so that we can stand. Look what Jesus says. "Stay awake at all times, praying that you may have strength to escape all these things that are going to take place and to stand before the Son of God." What we want to be on the alert for, why we want to be constantly prepared, is because we want to be able to stand before God in judgment. We want to be in heaven with God in eternity. We don't want to be caught unprepared. So think with me, if you will, for a few minutes, and I like little memory gimmicks. And one of the memory gimmicks that I sometimes use in preaching and sometimes use in teaching, it is a little acrostic. And so the acrostic watch, What are the things for which we should be on guard? What are the things for which we should be watching, be on the alert? And the first one is, we need to be careful about what we say. I thought about making James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12, the scripture reading this morning, where we are warned about the danger of the tongue. But there are so many passages, so many warnings about being careful about what we say. I love Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 11, where the wise man says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. Words can be positive things. Words can be powerful things. Words can encourage. Words can build up. Words can edify. Words can teach. Words can exhort. Words can rebuke. Words can help us to communicate with other people, to encourage other people. Words can be incredibly powerful, positive things. But they must be fitly spoken. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. And the reason that's so is because of the danger of saying the wrong thing or saying it in the wrong way. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25. This warning, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. Paul is so concerned about that that he comes back to it a few paragraphs later in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 16. 2 Timothy is generally believed to be the last letter that Paul wrote, perhaps while he was in prison in Rome, the second time confined in Rome. This time when he will not be released, but he will be executed by Nero. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 16, he says to Timothy, avoid irreverent babble, for it will lead people into more and more ungodliness. And then he goes on in verse 17 to say, and their talk will spread like gangrene. Among them are Hymenaeus and Philetus, who have swerved from the truth, saying that the resurrection has already happened. They are upsetting the faith of some. Words can upset the faith of some people. Words can cause incredible damage. We need to be watching very carefully what we say. We need to be watching very carefully how we say what we say. Watching our words. Watching our actions. There is, in 1 Samuel chapter 2, there is a prayer recorded that was prayed by Hannah. And Hannah was childless and she wanted a child. She wanted a son. And she's been praying to God for this child. And God's granting her prayer. God's giving her the child that she's going to then in turn dedicate to serving God. But in that prayer in 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 3, Hannah prays this. This is a good prayer. And this would be a good prayer for all of us to pray. She prays, talking about herself, speaking about herself. She says, talk no more so very proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. Hannah is concerned about her words. She's concerned about what she says. Let my talk not be proud, not be arrogant. But then she goes on to say, by actions, we are weighed by God. God weighs our actions. God is watching what we do. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. This is the passage that probably popped into many of your minds, where Paul says, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. We're going to stand before God and give an account of our actions. And we see that, I think, in Revelation chapter 20. In Revelation chapter 20 and verse 11, in this vision, John says, I saw a great white throne and him who was seated on it. From his presence, earth and sky fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne. And books were opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books, according to what? According to what they had done. It is very sobering for me to stop and think from time to time, just to kind of remind myself, every word I say is being recorded somewhere. Now, you understand that figurative language is being employed, but God is writing down every word that I say. And not only that, but everything I do, listen to this, every place I go, every keystroke, every action is being recorded. Why? Because we're going to stand before God and give an account of those things. We need to be watching very carefully, watching what we do, watching our actions, watching our thoughts, watching our thoughts. The wicked person in Isaiah chapter 55 is warned to forsake evil thoughts. God says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." Just like actions are going to be judged, our thoughts have to be brought into obedience as well. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning in verse 4, the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God. Look at the end of that. And take every thought captive to obey Christ. Every word is being observed, is being heard by God. Every action is being watched by God. Every thought is being recorded by God. So what do? We take every thought captive. And how do we do that? How do we control what we think? Well, Paul tells us, doesn't he, in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8? Make sure you're thinking about the right things. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Make sure, Paul says, that you're thinking about the right things. We need to be on the alert. We need to be on guard. We need to be watching our words, watching our actions, watching our thoughts, watching our company, watching our companions. Like it or not, And many times down through the years when this point has been raised in preaching or in teaching, somebody wants to quibble. But like it or not, we tend to become like those with whom we closely associate. You see that in marriage. You see that in marriage. I hope for Susan's sake that it's not true that you start looking alike. I know it's not true. But it is absolutely true, spending intimate time, close time with your husband, with your wife, you become more and more alike. My mother was amazed after just a short time, me being married, the things I was willing to eat. And actually even, I will confess, actually even liking some of those things. It is just true that we tend to become like those with whom we closely associate. And if you think that's not true, you are deceiving yourselves. Now that's not Gary Kerr. That's the Apostle Paul. Be not deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. I'm not going to take the time to read all of this, but One of the things I love about the bulk of the book of Proverbs, the book of Proverbs is written in the form of a father. Now, whether this was literally true or whether it's just a literary device is immaterial. But it's written from the perspective of a father thinking, what do I want to say to my son? What advice do I want to give my son? What do I want to teach my son? And then he begins writing. And the very first thing that he writes about, one of the very first things that he writes about, is be careful about your companions. Be careful about those with whom you associate. Can I say something here? I know some of this is tough on the parents with the little children. To me, that is all of that, every bit of it is sweet commotion. I love it. Don't be concerned. Thank you for bringing your children. Keep bringing your little children. Bob and I will talk louder. I promise you it doesn't bother either one of us. We are so glad that you're here. I love that sound. I love the fact that the children are here. I want the parents to know that. Our company, being careful about the company that we keep. Solomon says to his son, you've got to make sure you don't spend time with the wrong kind of people. Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 17, you therefore, beloved, knowing this beforehand, take care that you are not carried away with the error of lawless people and lose your own stability. How would somebody be carried away with the error of lawless people if they weren't spending considerable time with lawless people? We need to be concerned. We need to be watching about our company. I'll say this again to the young people. I remember this when I was adolescent, when I was a teenager, even maybe college age. And it used to really irritate me when my parents would ask me questions about my friends. Who are they? What kind of people are they? Bring them by. We want to meet them. We want to get to know your friend. The last thing I wanted was my friends coming over and meeting my parents. It took me a long time. It took me becoming a parent to really appreciate that what my parents were doing was right. They were warning me. They were concerned about who I was spending time with. They wanted to make sure that I wasn't spending too much time with the wrong kind of people. Watch your company. And then finally, watch our hearts. Solomon also says to his son in Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. As a matter of fact, everything that we've discussed this morning up to this point originates in the heart, comes from the heart. What about our words? Jesus says in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 34, for out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. If we're guilty of filthy talk, if we're guilty of crude language, if we're guilty of gossip, if we're guilty of lying, what Jesus is telling us is that's a reflection of our heart. That's a reflection of our character. What about our actions? Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 9 says, the heart of man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. What about our thoughts? Jesus again, Matthew chapter 15 and verse 9, for out of the mouth come evil thoughts. Out of the heart come evil thoughts. Murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, slander. Where does all that come from? It comes from the heart. What about company? Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 19, it is better to be of a lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. We need to be watching our hearts, our character. What kind of people are we? Well, what are our goals in life? What is it that we want in life? What are we trying to achieve in life? Is it obvious to people who know us, obvious to people who are around us, that our biggest priority, our highest priority, Our most important goal in life is to serve God and to please God and to be in heaven with God in eternity. As a matter of fact, we need to be on guard about everything in our lives. Be on guard, be sober, Paul says to Timothy, in all things. What happens if we don't? What happens if we don't? What if we don't keep watch over our words, over our actions, over our thoughts, over our companions, over our hearts? In Revelation chapters 2 and 3, Jesus dictates letters, seven of them, to churches in Asia. In Revelation chapter 3, he dictates a letter to the church at Sardis. And in that letter, he says to them this: therefore, if you do not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you will not know at what hour I will come to you. If you don't wake up, you're going to be punished. You're going to be lost. That's the message of Jesus to us today. Wake up. If you're not a Christian, if you don't wake up, if you don't do what you need to do to get into a right relationship with God, confessing that you believe Jesus is God's Son, repenting of your sins, being baptized into Christ for the remission of sins, you might very well be caught at the end of the world when Christ comes back, might very well be caught at the end of your life unprepared to meet God. For those of us who are Christians, watching doesn't end when we obey the gospel. As a matter of fact, being on guard, being on the alert, watching really just starts then. Satan is not especially concerned about you. If you're here and you're not a Christian, Satan may not be picking on you very much. And the reason is this: he doesn't have to. He already has you. You are already serving him. You already belong to him. He already knows if Jesus comes back and catches you like you are right now, or if you die in this condition, you're going to be right next to him in hell in eternity. So he doesn't have to exert very much energy on you. But let me tell you something. If you're here this morning and you are a Christian, Satan is active and he's deceptive. And he's trying as hard as he can, in every way that he can devise, every way that he can think of, to get you to turn your back on Christ. And one of the ways he's doing that is by whispering in your ear, you don't have to be on guard all the time. You don't have to be on the alert all the time. You don't have to be awake all the time. Just relax. Close your eyes. Enjoy the world. And don't worry so much about your responsibilities and your obligations and your duties to God. Has Satan been successful in getting you to let down your guard? Please understand that if you have, as a Christian, if Satan has won that battle and the world comes to an end, Christ comes back like a thief, we don't know when, or you die in that condition, you will be lost in hell in eternity. But you can do something about that this morning if you're a Christian and you've let your guard down. Ask God to forgive you of that shortcoming. Ask God to forgive you. Ask God to give you strength. Ask us to help you, to encourage you, to exhort you, to strengthen you, to pray with you, to constantly be on guard. Let's make sure. Sometimes you'll hear people say things like this: well, I've got your back. That's God puts us together in local churches for exactly that reason. You're not in this fight alone. You have not only God, but you have brothers and sisters in Christ who want to do everything they can to help you to be on guard, to be awake. If the invitation applies to you in any way this morning, if there's anything that we can help you or assist you in doing in responding to God's invitation, won't you please make your way down to one of these front seats right now while we stand and sing.